unto the Lord, increase our faith. The Lord replied, if you have faith the size of a mustard seed, you would say to this mulberry tree, be uprooted and planted in the sea, and it would obey you. Who among you would say to your servant, who has just come in from plowing or tending sheep in the field, come here immediately and take your place at table? Would he not rather say to him, prepare something for me to eat, put on your apron and wait on me while I eat and drink? You may eat and drink when I am finished. Is he grateful to that servant because he did what was commanded? So should it be with you. When you have done all you have commanded, all you have been commanded, say, we are unprofitable servants. We have done what we were obliged to do. The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise you, Lord Jesus Christ.
I'd like to thank you again for being patient and apologize again for being late. As I mentioned, I came from St. Robert's. I told Father Christian this week that I would be preaching all of the Masses, both here, Good Shepherd, and at St. Robert's. I knew this one was going to be tight. And so, on my way up, I called Don Pollard, and he didn't pick up because he's good. He's in church. That's his ownership. And then I called Bill Stroop, and he didn't pick up because he's good. And he's in church, so he didn't pick up his phone at church. So if I was more on top of it, I would have been thinking better and giving you guys a heads up ahead of time so that you didn't have to wonder, well, we're going to have a priest. But here I am. And so thank you so much for being patient with me. The reason that I indicated to Father Christian that I would be preaching this weekend's Masses is in the aftermath of what we all know at this point, what unfortunately unfolded last week at the LDS Church in Grand Blanc, and a terrible tragedy there, the destruction of that church. Very, very horrible thing that happened. I found out about that right after the 10:30 Mass. I celebrated 10:30 Mass at St. Robert and got to the end of the aisle and was immediately met by our school principal there, Sarah Bushy, and she had been on the phone for about the last half an hour with the flushing chief of police, Steve Kolaski, who was imploring Sarah that she do all things possible to secure the, out of precaution, to secure the premises, to lock down all of the buildings, to help people remove themselves from the property in a judicious and quick manner, to see if people were even aware of what was going on, to keep her eyes out if there was any signs of unusual activity or behavior by anybody. And that was at 11:30 when I walked down the aisle, the first thing that I was told. And so it was a very jarring way to conclude the Sunday Masses last weekend. So I was going through and working through that with Sarah last Sunday afternoon. My apologies, that's why principally I was not able to join us at the parish potluck. The Flushing chief of police, Steve Kolaski, specifically called Sarah about this because, as you may also know, one of the outcomes or one of the things that unfolded at the LDS Church was the discovery, perhaps, of other churches that were to be targeted for violence, and one of them was Holy Family Church down the road, a mile away. And so our pastor there, Father Joe Krupp, excellent, wonderful, beautiful man of faith, had a very difficult weekend and ensuing week. He spent all day Sunday and Monday with the ATF, the FBI, the local law enforcement, as they swept the church building and the school building for any evidence of incendiary devices or explosive devices that may have been planted. Thankfully, the buildings were cleared. They were not, as it turns out, in an immediate danger of an attack. But it was, it's been a very, very hard week for him, as you can imagine. He's been dealing with an enormous amount of fear in his community and been trying to manage that. Please, please pray for Father Joe, if you would be so kind to do that in your hearts today. He had a hell of a week and needs people who are praying for him and supporting him. And so, naturally, it's jarring for anybody who is a leader of a church community, especially when something like that happens. adults, we know that if we can step back from our fears, we can have a more objective understanding of the size of things and of the severity of things before us. And so today, in light of what happened at Grand Blanc last weekend, I'm addressing all of the masses in regards to our own church security. I went last week on convocation with most of the priests of the Diocese of Lansing. We were up north spending time with each other. We do this every year to love each other, to support and pray together. We also spoke about this incident, as did our bishop. Bishop Boyer spoke to us about it. Father Joe Krupp was not there, you can imagine. He stayed here in Grand Blanc to continue to tend to his people. When I came back Thursday, the following day on Friday, I went with Father Christian and with our school principal, Sarah Bushy, to a meeting held by the Genesee County Sheriff with Chris Swanson and his crew, together with about 500 other church leaders from around Genesee County. And for almost 2 hours, he and his team debriefed us, all of us, on the incident as it unfolded at that church, as well as every topic you could possibly conceive would be related to church security for your faith communities and people of worship, and how you go about doing that, how you speak about that, how you prepare ahead of time to prevent things from happening, what you do if hell breaks loose and you have to encounter it because someone has determined to do you evil anyways. So I've had a lot of information packed into my brain that I've been mulling over in my heart as well all week and into this weekend. And because I want to be a good pastor, I want to address it directly for us. So I'm going to speak today in this homily about not everything. There are a lot of things I'm not going to say because we don't have the time and I'm already late for Mass. But I will say some things. I want you to know that there are lots of other things as well. But what I'm going to speak about today specifically is about what the emergency plan is, should all hell break loose, and we have to meet it. To start off, I want you to be aware of the perspective of what we're talking about. I am fully aware, you should be aware of what I'm about to say. If you ever have to encounter that situation, before you encounter that situation, you are 10 times more likely to be struck by lightning. It's a statistical fact than you are to ever have to engage an active emergency in a church. You are 1,000 times more likely to be a victim of a car crash driving to church than you are to ever have to engage danger inside your church. Okay, we're talking about a very, very small probability, but evidently that probability is non-zero. Need to be prudent, but they're all things that are non-zero. That's why we're going to talk about it today. So I'm going to specifically talk about what the emergency plan is if we have to engage it. So the first thing that we need to be aware of is that in the event of emergency, everybody in this church has a specific, critical, personal, moral responsibility. You have a responsibility in the event of an emergency. Have something that you are required morally to do for the sake of the safety of yourself and everybody if we encounter that. I'm going to define what that responsibility is. I'm about to say some things that it's not going to be a surprise to anybody. These are things we already know by instinct, but it's important for us to verbalize them so that we're all aware and on the same page. In an emergency, everybody in this church is morally responsible for only one thing. Only one thing. And I have to know that when an emergency happens, what you're going to do is what your strongest instinct tells you to do. That's just what happens. When there's no time to think, when evil breaks through, whatever your first instinct is what you're going to choose. So what we're talking about today is how you and I are called and required to train our first instinct. We're going to verbalize the first instinct. You have to know that this is what is our requirement. So, if you're a child and there's an emergency at church, all children have one job in that moment. And the only job a child has in an emergency is to listen immediately to what your parents tell you to do. To listen immediately to what your mom and your dad tells you to do. And to do that as quickly as you can. That's the only moral job of a child in the event of an active emergency. Children, if you do that, should there ever be an emergency, you are going to be as safe as you possibly can be until the emergency is over. Okay? That's your only job. If you are a woman, if you your best instinct. Your only job in an active emergency is to protect the children and the elderly and the vulnerable who are around you. Inside of you is the mama bear. I don't need to tell you that. Mama bear comes out when there's no time to think. You are the first protector of people in an emergency. You have to do that. That's the only thing you're required to do. And when the emergency unfolds, that's going to express itself in only two things. You have only two decisions you're going to make when you protect the children and the elderly and the vulnerable around you. You're either going to hide them, put them low, and put your body over them, or you're going to run away with them. You're going to run away from the danger. Whichever one of those is safer, that's what you do as the protector of your people. You're going to hide them, or you're going to run away with them. And if you're a woman in church, and there are no children, or elderly, or vulnerable people around you, you are responsible to do that for yourself. Okay? You're responsible to protect yourself, which means you are required to hide yourself, or to run away. It's not a cowardly thing at all to run away. It's your moral responsibility. Even if there are people still behind you, you have to protect yourself. I need you to walk away. I need you to run away. If that's the safest thing to do. Or to hide if that's the safest thing to do. That's the best way that you protect people in an emergency. Okay, it's your one job. If you're a man here, in the event of an active emergency, you men and myself have only one job. And that job is already the demand of the best instinct inside of you, which is to immediately turn and run at the danger. Immediately. You engage the danger and you subdue it at every cost. There are no rules of decorum or permission. You immediately stop. You make loud noises. You tackle. Practically speaking, this looks like gang tackling. Okay? We are not there to brawl. We are there to immediately subdue. What that means is you go to the eyes, to the throat, and to the groin as strongly and swiftly as you possibly can. The instinct that you have to fight against is the instinct, your second instinct, which is to protect your wife and your children. You have to trust your wife to protect herself and her children. She knows how to do that. That's her job. It's her instinct already. You have to lead your family. You have to run at the danger. Okay, that's the only job of men in this emergency. Engage immediately with overwhelming multiplying force. If we ever have to meet them, we need to know that these are our jobs. And the truth of the matter is that if every one of us in this church knows these one jobs, and if everybody in this church does these one jobs, there is never any emergency that would ever come through these doors, that would ever hope to last longer than 10 seconds flat. Ever. It would be over before it started. I hate having to say that. But we have to be able to know what's responsible, what we're responsible for, and know one in about 10 million possibility, which is what about the odds are. For me personally, I want you to know where I'm at. As a priest, I'm very well aware, as a leader as well, about the necessity for security. I was a chaplain at a high school for 6 years. Part of being a chaplain at a high school was that I needed to train my own mind, and I needed to think from time to time about what I would do if anybody ever came into that building to hurt my children. And it was very, very clear. I knew that if anybody ever came to hurt the people I love, God would run at them. They would go through my chest, and one of us would be incapacitated, and I would make sure it wasn't me. That's it. You all need to know that I love you. I love you. I love you. And if someone comes here to hurt you, they will go through me. I can get there in 1 second. I can get there in 1.5 seconds. And I would get there should know that in Michigan law, we are what's called an open carry and a concealed carry state. And what that means is, under normal circumstances, for law-abiding citizens, a person may choose to open carry on their person, or through the regulatory processes and background checks and corrective training through the state of Michigan, they may obtain a permit to conceal carry on their person. We are allowed to do that by law in Michigan. Those who choose to do so are also aware that the ability to lawfully open or conceal carry does not apply to every location. So they know that there are some places that are restricted from open carry or concealed carry. And among those locations where there is a restriction on concealed carry is a house of worship. So those who are CPL holders, concealed pistol license, those who are CPL holders may not lawfully conceal carry in a house of worship with one exception, and that exception is if they receive the explicit personal permission of the owner of the property, the administrator of the property, which in terms of the Catholic Church would mean unless they have the explicit permission of the pastor. Beyond that, Michigan law provides one additional exception for those who are legally allowed to carry in a restricted area like a house of worship. And those people include active duty or off-duty police officers, retired police officers who maintain their credentials, auxiliary reserve police, licensed private investigators may do so, parole and probation officers with the Department of Corrections may do so, even current and former state court judges. They are allowed to conceal carry in restricted areas without the permission, without my permission. Those members in our community know that they are allowed to do so, and I encourage them to do so. It is my reasoned opinion that what we do in safety as a church community is to be prudent. Okay? You need to know that I have not given permission to CPL holders in our community. I know that we have good and faithful law-abiding members of our community who are allowed to conceal carry. I have not given them permission to do that here inside the house of worship. It is always my first preference that law enforcement be able to do that in our midst, or those who are not legally restricted or need my permission. The reason that's my first preference is obvious, because they particularly have been professionally trained not only to use the means of armor necessary, but to know how and when to use lethal force or not to use lethal force, to know de-escalation tactics when necessary, to know how to do this particularly when chaos is unfolding and everybody's freaking out. They can remain focused because they've been trained to do that. Okay? So, to the extent that it's possible for us here, I know that we have a smallish community, that's the first line of armor that we will have. The visible armor, those people are the people that would protect us anyways. They would be the people that arrived at the scene if we ever needed Montrose police. Those people will be the invisible armor until the backup armor arrives. If the situation ever arises here in Montrose, due to the size of our community, wouldn't be able to reasonably expect that because we simply might not have the law enforcement present. It will be my specific duty. I'm going to be coordinating this with Don Pollard, who's sitting right here, if you don't know who he is, to make sure that protection happens in our church in a way that's prudent, in a way that I explicitly know. I say these things so that you may all know that you're safe, and that you are safe specifically not only because we know our jobs, but because those who might need to use armor protection are capable of doing it safely when chaos has happened. Right? So we're not here to be cowboys, Wild West. We're not here simply to lean into even our instincts to just use overwhelming force at any cost. We still have moral duties. You know, we still have to be safely responsible for ourselves. But I know from the evidence of history, from the stats, and from training that security personnel do, that armor, especially in the absolute worst case of scenarios, makes communities safer and makes emergencies end more quickly. And it's also my responsibility to make sure that we're as safe as reasonably possible. So you can see that there's a balance that we're always striking in our communities to try to figure out, okay, what's overboard and what's underboard and what is reasonable for us to do. And I've been trying to think, continuing to think about how we do that here in Montrose. So I love you, and I'm going to tackle the person before even that might even be available to anybody else. It is not my preference ever that we have to unreasonably lock doors around here or have to hire outside armed security to patrol. I don't know that that's the case here in Montrose. We all know each other, and we all know basic safety things that were taught as kids as well. Situational awareness. You know your surroundings. You know the people that are here normally, and you know what unusual behavior looks like. You know where your exits are when you go inside. It's just situational awareness. If you see something, you say something. We don't have to be polite. The safety of other people we think is reasonably on the line. We take care of things and we engage in order to prevent something that might otherwise happen. Right? There are many things that we can do besides to ensure that nothing even ever comes to pass or to stop it before it would. Our ushers are already aware of their responsibility, for example, to be aware and attentive to the doors. They're already greeting people on their way into Mass. They see things from the back, so they have their eyes on things in ways that our perspective in church, we might not be able to do all the things, right? So there are lots of things that invisibly are already happening in which we are already protected, you know? And this is just thoroughly uncomfortable and, A, giving us homily, but I want you all to be able to know where I am at on these things. So I have felt a lot of things this week. One of the things I have not felt is fear. Okay, I'm not afraid. I've not been afraid at all this week. And the scriptures remind us very specifically about all of these things. All three readings tie right into the life that you and I have to contend with in our local communities here in the greater Flint area, surrounding here in Montrose. Habakkuk says, "Why the violence? Lord, will you protect us?" And God says, "Remember, there is a vision that God sees. That vision is written down, and he commands through the prophets that we know the vision of God for us. Because he knows every single thing that's ever going to come to pass in our lives. He knows everything we're going to meet. And he's already prepared you and I with the graces necessary and the resources necessary for anything that ever happens. And he says, when you and I do this, when we hold fast to the vision of God, it makes us just, and the just shall live. But for those who don't know the vision of God or cling to the vision of God, the opposite is true. It says, otherwise we are rash, and the rash will not survive. St. Paul says the same encouragement. He says, look, when we believe in Jesus, there's a fundamental change that happens in our hearts. Right? Because without Jesus, what is left for you and I is the spirit of fear. And when the spirit of fear rules people's hearts, nobody thrives. Communities can't thrive if people aren't safe. But when we come to know Jesus, we have a new spirit, and that spirit is of power. That spirit is of love. And that spirit is of self-control. Jesus makes us morally responsible to wield that spirit, to hone, to develop that spirit of God in us, to make ourselves more capacious, to enlarge in our capacity to be governed by the spirit of love and of power and self-control. And the best way that we practice and train for that is by doing exactly what Jesus said. Jesus is trying to teach those who would follow him what it means to have faith and live faith. He says, if you want this, you want more of this, you want to increase in this, be obedient to the commands of God. Faith is directly correlated to our decisions to humble ourselves and obey the commands of God. And what is obedience? It's simple. It's training. It's what you and I train ourselves to do. How we train ourselves to think, train ourselves to see, how we train ourselves to speak, how we train ourselves to behave. And when we train ourselves according to the laws of God, the loving commands of God, we're never going to fear anything. Because we already know that we are powerful. We already know how to have self-control. We already know what the demands of love are. Even the demands of love in an emergency. And we're prepared to fight. that will bring us flourishing, that will bring our community the greatest amount of safety, exterior safety, interior safety, as is possible in this life. And I think that's what's most important, to just to be left with this morning. And what we're going to do moving forward, not be afraid. We're going to keep coming to church. We're going to keep worshiping God. We're going to keep living the life of the sacraments, the life of virtue, the life of prayer, because that's what God asks us to do. And in the meantime, we know that every other instinct within us will align itself to what God asks of us as well. So I want to just conclude by praying for our community and especially for the Church of Red Lake. The most loving Father, come before you this day. Thank you that you love us faithfully, that you have a vision for our lives. We thank you that you ask us to cling to that vision in justice. Thank you, Lord, for protecting us, and for putting the best instincts inside, that we may truly rise to every occasion that we meet. And Jesus, we want to pray especially for your peace to continue to be with the LDS Church in Grand Lake, for they may still be dealing with enormous amounts of fear or chaos, especially internally, in their hearts or their minds, their memories. Please, Lord, help them and heal them. Help us to pray for them and to support them in the ways that we know how. Jesus, we ever pray and ask for your continued protection of the angels upon us, especially that we